Hey Hogan, and followed that by the plaintiff's attorneys who wish to be heard. And then we will hear from Mr. Robert Gore and Jonathan Hayward in Ketchikan and Ladd McBride in Fairbanks. And we also have some others here who would like to be heard in the audience, so we'll go in that order. At this time, we'd like to get started on an update. Mr. AG or Mr. Commissioner, who would like to start off?
Commissioner Noah will be starting, Mr. Chairman. Our comments are going to be pretty brief today. We understand there are a number of other people that want to testify, so we will try to move this along as quickly as we can. The Attorney General and I have come today to ask you to move forward on HB 201. Over the past month, we have reviewed with you both the details of the bill and presented the land package associated with reconstructing the trust. Today, I would like to discuss the details of the compensation package that has been put forward as part of the trust reconstitution and the status of the discussions on settlement with mental health lawyers. The Attorney General will discuss why the bill is acceptable from a legal standpoint. First, however, I'd like to backtrack a bit and review the purpose of this legislation. The intent of the legislation has been as follows. First, to allow people held hostage by this mental health trust lands lawsuit to be freed. Second, to reconstruct the land trust and propose a fair compensation package. Three, to provide the courts with direction from the legislature on what you consider sold from the mental health lands trust. And four, to bring resolution to this long legal proceedings that have been involved around this issue. HB 201 can accomplish these tasks. First, I'd like to discuss the compensation package. And in your packet, you should have this handout that says summary of values and compensation package for the mental health trust. Sort of by way of background, before I get into the specific numbers, in developing this compensation package for reconstructing the trust, it's been the state's focus to make the trust whole. The method used has been to return as much original trust land as reasonable to the trust, and then to replace lands not returnable to the trust with other similar state lands, and finally to provide cash to the trust. In developing this compensation package, it is important to note two items. First, the state has not used the deduction allowed by the Supreme Court for money spent on mental health programs since 1978. This deduction is equal to $1.3 billion. If the state wanted to strictly comply with the Supreme Court has ordered, the state would have taken the $1.3 billion deduction available and added to that the 564,600 acres of original trust land and said that the trust is reconstructed. But if you'd note, we've, in addition to this, added additional state lands and proposed cash as part of this resolution package. Second, the land value estimates that were established as the basis of the Chapter 66 process was really done on the basis of looking at things on a parcel-by-parcel basis. One parcel is equal to one value relative to another value. But this does not necessarily represent what we would consider fair market value when you look at these particular these values in the total. And in our mind, the values that are presented and we're happy to continue along with really are higher than what we would consider fair market value numbers. And I'd like for you to consider that because, in essence, we have in that way also favored the plaintiff's view of the value of this particular trust. Now, if I might go through the summary very quickly. As you know, the original trust had 1 million acres in it. The lands that we feel can be returned to the trust include 466,000 acres of surface and subsurface lands. There are 22,400 acres of subsurface lands that are mineral estate and 76,000 acres of subsurface land that would be hydrocarbon only. And that's a typo there, but which equals 664,400 acres of land. The land value of the lands not returnable to the trust, which is different. If you think about the lands that we can put back into the trust, whatever they were worth before, they're worth now. And there really isn't a value question associated with that. The value of the original trust lands that are not returnable to trust, in our opinion, are worth $636 million. Now, I should note here that these are DNR values and not necessarily agreed upon values between ourselves and the plaintiffs at this point. Now, in terms of the compensation package of what we are returning to the trust, the replacement lands, the 356,000 acres of surface and subsurface lands, are worth approximately $264 million. The 200,000 acres of subsurface lands are worth 116 million acres for a total of $380 million worth of value. In addition to this, we have added $225 million to the compensation package. We view that cash in hand has a greater value than land just sitting idly by. The total value of the land plus the cash is worth $605 million, which we feel is essentially equal to the lost in value or the land that could not be returned to the trust, $636 million. I should note two items there. First, that there will be a need to be a change made in the bill to make sure that the $225 million goes from what we have put in the incentive package to the compensation package. Right now, the way it's set up in the bill, that money would be lost if there is not settlement by December 15th of this year. It is our proposal that move over to the compensation package and continue on as part of the total compensation for the land trust. If you decide to add the additional $31 million there would be no question here. We will not oppose you in doing that. That will certainly be your decision. We will feel at that point in time that you will most likely be overcompensating the trust for the value lost, but that, again, will be your decision. I should note in this again that in trying to put these numbers together, there is not complete agreement between ourselves and the plaintiffs. And the biggest area of difference is in subsurface values. We understand that the plaintiffs value these more highly than we do at this point in time. The difficulty has been and will always continue to be the difficulty in looking below the ground as to what minerals are worth in place. And I will give you a quick example. It's my understanding that the plaintiffs value these lands, these subsurface lands, at about $540 million. We have given those same lands a value of $156 million that in terms of what has to be made up. Of that $540 million that the plaintiffs are arguing is available, $250 million approximately of that value is located in the Chena Recreation Area in the Fairbanks area. Now, one comment there, when you try and value minerals in place, coming from a mining background, I can tell you very clearly that minerals are only worth something if you can get them out of the ground with a profit. Minerals themselves are not worth anything in the ground. But we have been generally willing to go along with the view that there is a value to these minerals if they in fact can be mined in a profitable manner. But I would ask you to keep in mind as you review these numbers that if you've got $10 worth of value in the ground and it takes you $15 million to get it out of the ground, then you aren't making a profit and it is essentially not worth that value that's in the ground at that point. The next two pages in this handout simply give you a graphic representation of the lands that have been removed from the trust and the lands that are going back in. The second sheet of the colored handout that I should call your attention to, it is on the non-returnable land trust, 530,000 plus acres, is equivalent to the blue or the 360,000 acres of surface and subsurface. And one of the areas that we're not trying to be confusing, but could be somewhat confusing, is where we have total estate, surface and subsurface, and then we have subsurface only. And obviously there's a difference in value if you only have subsurface, but that has already been taken into consideration in the valuation process. So in a very short presentation, that is a summary of the compensation package that is being addressed here today. Now, there are other things in the bill that have been added on for settlement purposes. One of those is the trust authority. And essentially, in terms of looking at this issue, it needs to be understood that the state feels that we are essentially have made the trust whole at this point in time. Now, we may not agree with the plaintiffs in terms of all the numbers, but if there's a discrepancy, again, we're happy to continue the discussion with the plaintiffs. Unfortunately, you should also note that we have not taken the $1.3 billion deduction for what we can take off for the offset of what we spent on mental health programs to date. If there is a real discrepancy in the numbers and the courts have to deal with the issue, then it's our view that fund will be there to be used up as part of the compensation package if we are in fact incorrect at this point in time. Finally, I'd like to go over a brief review of where we are on the negotiation process with all the groups involved. I think generally we can reach agreement with all the groups associated with this, with the exception of the mental health lawyers. And I will tell you, as I just said a bit earlier to Mr. Jesse, we are prepared and would be delighted to be able to come to a true settlement on this issue. The unfortunate part of at this point in time is growing limited, and we feel it's time to move on with this particular issue. But we will say in public again, we are prepared to settle this issue. But with all the other groups, I think we're pretty much there in terms of the land list, or generally there with the land list and the other language associated with this bill. The area that we are in most conflict with the mental health attorneys is really what they are asking from us in terms of giving them a settlement at this point in time. And it's important for you to understand a bit of our mindset. Our mindset it is that we have compensated the trust fully, and we're over here talking about items to be used for settlement purposes only. Not whether or not the trust has been fully compensated, but what is required to bring the issue to settlement. So we've essentially stepped out beyond what it is required to make the trust whole. In all fairness, I think it's important that I review for you, and I think they can themselves today, what they are asking us to do. And I will tell you, in some respects, we are willing to meet them halfway in terms of the settlement. But let me go through some of the things that are being requested by the attorneys at this point in time. And I should make one other note, that this proposal that's in front of you really has come from Mr. Volin and Mr. Jesse. I'm not clear whether Mr. Gottstein and Mr. Walker have actually agreed to this proposal. And I think as they testify today, you might ask them specifically what is required from their point of view to settle on this particular case. But let me go through very briefly what has been asked. The mental health community lawyers have asked that there be established a mental health trust endowment administered by the trust authority, which would be essentially a permanent fund. There would be approximately $100 million from the mental health trust income account that would go into that specific account, and $450 million over 15 years that would also go into that permanent fund account, which would be roughly equivalent to $550 million. The original mental health land and replacement land would also go into that endowment, and the trust authority would have the responsibility of spending the endowment earnings, and there would not be legislative appropriation required of any of that spending to be done. Also, under the Chapter 66 appropriation process, which would be in addition to the permanent fund, the trust authority would make recommendations on the amounts needed to meet the needs of the beneficiary. So the trust would make recommendations to the legislature as to how much money would need to be spent on mental health programs. In reviewing, the governor and the legislature would consider only the needs of the beneficiaries without regard to other potential objects of state expenditures. In addition, if amounts appropriated differ from by the legislature or the governor, if amounts appropriated differ from the trust authority's recommendations, findings would be required to explain reasons for the differences in providing the basis for determining that amounts appropriated meet the needs of the beneficiaries. So that would include general funds as well as the dollars that would be coming from the trust authority. Basically, what they would say is you, the legislature, if you want to make recommendations, would have to make a finding as to why you don't intend to do that, and or the governor. Also, that the spending bill would have to be passed by the 75th day and forwarded to the governor by the 75th day of each session. And that is essentially what has been requested of us in terms of the negotiation. We have sought ways to move towards the center in terms of looking at this concept of the endowment. We have looked for ways to come to the center in terms of what's involved with the trust authority. And again, we stand ready to continue these discussions because we feel that a settlement would be the best approach to take. Now, maybe a couple additional points, and I'll be quiet here. It's my understanding that the mental health lawyers have come basically to oppose this particular bill. We have really, through that past discussion, there are two major sticking points from the state standpoint. One, control of general fund dollars and the volume of funds that go into a permanent fund. And those are the two major sticking points. I wish it was 5 years ago and there was a whole bunch of money floating around, but it's not. And those are the two major sticking points from our point of view. I would suggest that if there is a long discussion on valuation, that we are more than prepared to respond to very specifically as to how we've arrived at the numbers that we've arrived at in terms of compensation value to the trust. So we'll be happy to do that if the plaintiffs or if you want in the future. And finally, I would request that in terms of the settlement proposal, as each of the lawyers review for you their concerns, that you ask them the question, what specifically is it that is required from your point of view to settle this case? Because I can't tell you that we have a clear picture of what that is at this point in time. With that, I'll turn it over to the Attorney General.
Mr. Chairman, you have in your packets two sheets. The top sheet captioned State v. Weiss, 706 B. 2nd, 681. I provide that to you once again to use that as your measure, your guide stick, when you analyze committee substitute for House Bill 201. And it makes clear that we have satisfied the essential objective of the Supreme Court. That is to say, the Supreme Court's message was threefold in reconstituting the trust. First of all, that original mental health lands be restored. The second point was, to the extent that sold lands could not be restored, that the trust be reimbursed for fair market value at the time of the sale. And the third point made by the Supreme Court in directing the reconstitution of the trust was that the trial court was directed to grant a set-off for mental health expenditures made by the state. And those features are directly incorporated into 201. The second sheet that I provided you, I think, is a brief summary of two pages of the 117-page text of Judge Green's late December 1993 decision. I'd urge you to read the entire text, but I'd like to make two points that I think arise from it. First, Judge Green made the point that adequacy of the funding and services provided in Alaska is for mental health services is outside the scope of the Weiss v. State case. She goes on specifically to declare that the Alaska Mental Health Enabling Act did not guarantee any particular level of funding for mental health services in the state. And she further goes on to say, and the excerpt that I have provided you is that the remedy guidelines of the Alaska Supreme Court in State v. Weiss did not discuss any guaranteed income stream to the trust. Mr. Chairman, some people have asked, and I believe that Commissioner Noah has, in some respects, answered the question already. Will passage of this bill end the litigation? The answer today is that it will not. With what we know today, we believe that the bill, which, as we've previously explained to you, provided both a resolution and a settlement alternative, will be resolved by resolution. That is, we will not have all parties signing on, and that means that there will be further litigation. The question I think that you're going to be asking yourselves is, why should we sign off? And the answer is quite simple. In our view, this bill offers the quickest and fairest resolution of the Supreme Court's directive in reconstituting the trust. Contrasted with the Chapter 66 settlement, which we have clearly abandoned, but note not only was that settlement attacked by most parties, but as Judge Green herself made clear in her December decision, it was simply a trade-off of litigation. That is, we were guaranteed litigation, even with the settling plaintiffs, over individual parcels of land. And we have, in this bill, obviously proposed a total package. Even in the absence of Chapter 66, we would be litigating. What we believe we have done here is narrow the issues which would be presented to the Superior Court based on her earlier decisions and that of the Supreme Court. We believe this best satisfies the state's obligations, both to the mental health community and obviously specifically to the Supreme Court and its directive.
Okay, any questions of Commissioner Noah or Mr. A.G. Cello? Representative Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, going to the Commissioner Noah, the summary value sheet that you provided us, what is the difference between subsurface estate, mineral estate, and hydrocarbon only? And where does coal fall in there?
The subsurface estate for coal falls under mineral estate. In terms of the difference between the lands, it's simply a whole group of different lands have been identified as subsurface lands, specifically along the Kenai Peninsula area, and those are hydrocarbon-only lands that are associated with that, and under Susitna Flats. I hope I'm answering your question properly.
When you say that, are you transferring only the oil and gas rights, or you're transferring all the rights, but the only identified values are hydrocarbon?
Really, we're transferring the hydrocarbon rights in terms of the hydrocarbon areas.
That would be oil and gas only, not coal?
In those particular areas, it would be hydrocarbon only that we're talking about, not the coal values.
And then when you talk about mineral estate, what exactly is transferred there?
That would be the total mineral estate associated with that.
Does that include oil and gas?
It would.
And then if I might ask one more, Mr. Chairman, as to point two, and you said the dispute there between the plaintiffs and the state over the value of the subsurface lands. How, again, were those values arrived at, your estimated values for surface and subsurface?
Over the last 20 months, there's been quite a detailed process that's gone on for valuation. In terms of surface values, there was a specific panel established where the plaintiffs identified an appraiser, the state identified an appraiser, and each of those appraisers identified a third person as a valuation panel. And that's how the surface values were arrived at, which is obviously the reason I feel we're much closer on that is it's much easier to evaluate that. The plaintiffs used a gentleman by the name of Mr. Metz out of Fairbanks to identify subsurface values, and we have a portion of that information. We also did a whole group of in-house valuation through the Division of Mining and the Geologic Survey, identifying values and looking at what those were worth. And that's how we've arrived at these numbers.
Representative Foster?
Yeah, very briefly, can you go over the last page there, the impact on Nome and the lands that it encompasses?
The impact on Nome?
Yeah, it's got a section on Nome on the last page of the thing just referred to. Here it's the summary of values and compensation. Oh, wait a minute.
Land list,
yeah.
Actually, I should have, but I didn't bring that particular list with me.
Yeah, there's three parcels there, D something or other, and then it says Nome, and then it affects the public facilities.
Maybe Mr. Swanson includes
the public facilities. I don't understand what the impact would be on the area, if any.
I can respond generally to those. Those are state-owned parcels that would be transferred to the trust and would be managed for trust purposes through our proposal by DNR.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, we have a lot of people who want to testify today, and I'm sure we're going to have an opportunity to get back into questions and answers, so I'm going to try to keep the questions to a minimum. But I'd like to recognize this time Representative Hanley, then Navarre.
Well, I can. Are we going to get back today to the commissioner? Or Well, let me just ask briefly. Clearly, the people do not agree with your assessment of the $156 million. If they use the same valuation techniques, would they also say that the land that you are proposing to replace them is undervalued? Or I would assume they're probably agreeing with you on the value of the land that's proposed for replacement. Is that true?
I think that's essentially correct. I think there will always be some differences, but in our mind, they're pretty minor differences at this point.
You're absent. Oh, excuse me. Go ahead.
Well, I just had a quick question on the moving the $225 million from incentive to compensation. And in the bill, it was basically if there was an agreement, that would happen. Now it's part of the bill that passes. And my question is, if the bill passes and we don't come to any agreement, are we still under the 6% and the $225 million now we've added on top of that?
The answer is no. We would not be under the 6% any longer. And the $225 million would be compensation, again, to a mental health account that would be then appropriated out by the legislature to meet mental health program needs.
So the 225 only goes into effect if the judge, because we're under a court order right now, I believe, for the 6%. Is that not correct?
No.
That's just an agreement that we've agreed to do?
Yes.
So we can change the statute?
Yes.
Senator Navarro.
Okay, the lands and the trust are going to be managed by DNR?
That is how it is under our proposal. That's correct.
And if the legislature did not adequately fund DNR for the purposes of managing the lands, which I would argue that we're not doing now for our other state lands, then would we be subject to litigation or liable for breach of trust?
Mr. Chairman, the state will always be subject, or the party administering will always be subject to a challenge about whether it has carried out its fiduciary obligations to manage the purpose of the trust, whether it's land or money.
Does the trust not want to manage them? I mean, is it the state's proposal or that you manage them? Or
it really is, in a way, a compromise between a whole group of different parties. I'm not sure that the state cares a tremendous amount, but these are public lands at this point in time, and if you talk to the resource community and the environmental community, this is an important issue with them. That number one, and I think it's important to understand too that the Mental Health Enabling Act did not set up a separate trust authority. It was managed by DNR before, and I think it's clear that DNR has to set up at a very minimum a separate group that would pay attention to this specifically. And I would hope that in the future that the legislature would always pay attention to that particular group of people and maintain the funding. But the idea of having a trust authority and having that trust authority oversee what DNR would do is not an objectionable view as far as we're concerned. It was not an unreasonable compromise, and why it has been included as part of the settlement package. The problem is that with this issue, you don't have settlement unless you get everyone to agree. You can't be in a position where you settle with one group and then people keep suing you and you keep creating a whole group of new floors on this. You know, a settlement by everyone's the best way to go, but you can't keep creating floors. And that's the problem associated with it.
Okay, one more question, then we're going to move on because we've heard from the administration before. We haven't heard from several of the others yet.
Representative Navarro. Two questions, Mr. Chairman. The first one is with regard to this demand that there be findings if the legislature not fund up to the level requested or recommended by the trust. And since this is going to be a court settlement, how does that impact what is the legislature's appropriation power under the Constitution? And if it doesn't impact it, then of what purpose would it be?
Let Bruce answer from a legal standpoint, but just sort of doing business standpoint, let me answer that. The trust authority concept is something that's important to the plaintiffs and has been added for settlement purposes. And in terms of the money that is coming from the trust authority and that group managing those lands, there's some logic in allowing that to happen. It's when it goes beyond that to the general fund appropriation that we have had concerns. So from in terms of doing business, the real question is, have you made the trust whole? And once you've done that, then everything else that's done is for settlement purposes only. Maybe you can respond to the legal aspects.
Mr. AG?
Mr. Chairman, the proposal, which would provide for the authority, in essence, making recommendations on the full amount of monies to be funded and how they should be spent for mental health programs, subject to your ability only to reject with specific findings, we found objectionable, and we have indicated, I think in strong terms, that this was not something we could recommend to the legislature, nor one that we thought the legislature would lightly accept, because it really goes to the essence of the appropriations authority of the legislature. Hence, impasse.
Just one final comment. I think that the settlement that's been proposed and the way that you're going about it is a lot different approach than I think was taken in the past. And I actually think that it's, while a fairly hard line in some ways, I also think that it's a fairly, on the surface, a pretty fair proposal. And at this point, I'm inclined at least to be leaning in support of it, although I do want to hear from the other litigants. I just want to put that in a record because I expect people will be lobbying me on it.
Thank you, Mr.
And for the record, too, this bill is a priority, and we will be not moving it out today, but we will be very shortly. Thank you. Mr. Hogan, could we hear about the offset?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Jay Hogan. I work under contract for House Finance Committee. The information being passed out has a single-page chart on the top of one of the sections. This is a table that sets out the values that arrive at the item called set-off. And I think it's important that the committee know the history behind this particular document. There are two numbers of interest. Over on the right-hand column, through the 1994 authorized, about two-thirds of the way down the list, under cumulative estimated expenditure, there is a figure of $1,302,094,000,000. That is the nominal value of set-off. That's the one that the administration has chosen to recommend in the bill that is before you as a committee substitute for 201. There is another, an equally valid way of evaluating that, and that is the bottom line number of $1,574,900,000. That simply converts the expenditures made over the period of time to current day dollars. So for your information, that's where the numbers are arrived at. There are two audits of significance in here that need some reference. During the Sheffield administration, the Department of Health and Social Services and the Legislative Audit Division worked together to prepare what is called a special report. You have that in one of your blue-covered attachments. For the Interim Mental Health Trust Commission, the purpose of this audit was to arrive at a valid estimate of what the state had spent from the general fund on mental health purposes from the time that the trust was, the land was removed from the trust in 78 up through the time of this audit completion, which is September 3rd, 1985. So the numbers in the chart for the years 1979 up through 1985 come from this audit. There is a second audit, also with a blue cover, mental health funding for fiscal year 1992. This was done by the Cooper administration, taking into consideration an intervening decision by Judge Green that had the effect of expanding the definition of mental health services. This audit was conducted by OMB to find the appropriate program components where mental health trust money could properly be spent. The figures from 1986 on reflect that, but there is a third document. In May of 1990, Governor Cooper's budget director brought before the conference committee this plan. The plan being to go through the budget and carefully identify the components that were providing mental health services and to fund those components or portions of those components from the mental health trust income account. What was done as a result of this is seen on the attached pages. In the 1990 operating budget, some $41.7 million was spent from the Mental Health Trust. As a result of the change recommended to the legislature and appropriated in 90, the very next year, the appropriations that were counted from Mental Health Trust income account totaled 97, I believe it was. Yes, 97.2, the second funding source total. And they have since gone up they went up the following year to $123 million. The point of this is that these numbers were not arrived at by some method of using a dartboard. They were carefully researched in two different audits. They were brought before the legislature, first in 1990, then again in the budget presented to the 91 session of the legislature, and have been used as the basis of making appropriations for mental health purposes since the FY91 budget. From this information, two different people in legislative service compiled a statement of estimated unrestricted general fund expenditures for mental health purposes. The current director of OMB, our current director of budget review, prepared them for a House subcommittee. Two people from the research division prepared them for Representative Larson's office at that time. So I think, and the numbers were similar, not to the dime, but similar. So I think a great deal of work has gone into trying to establish a fair estimate of what the state has spent on mental health income, on mental health purposes, for the time from the dissolution of the trust to the present. The two numbers for you to select from using the basis of this are 1.3 or 1.574. Mr. Chairman, there's one other item that I'd like to call to the committee's attention. The question has come up again about the appropriation authority of the legislature. As everyone is well aware, we have two exceptions to our constitutional prohibition against dedication of revenues. One is the permanent fund, and the other is the constitutional budget reserve fund. I have included in this final handout labeled Senate Report three pages that we excerpted from the Mental Health Enabling Act passed the Congress in 1956. I'd call to your attention subparagraph 3 on the first page. The second sentence, the income and proceeds from disposition of these lands, the million acres, must be administered as a public trust, with the expenses of the mental health program having first call on such funds. Amounts not needed for mental health programs can be used for other public purposes as the legislature may determine. That statement and that use, that dual purpose use, is reiterated again as the last paragraph of the report, and that shows on the bottom of the page. The million acres was given to the state, and a great deal of discretion over the use of surplus funds was given to the state. The second page is an interesting comment by Alaska legislative delegate E.L. Bob Bartlett, at that time our only representative in Washington. What he is, in essence, arguing here is that there was a move afoot in the U.S. House of Representatives to earmark these funds exclusively for mental health purposes. He argued against it. And that is shown here in this page. It is also interesting to note that at that time in the House of Representatives, there were 500,000 acres under consideration, the proceeds from which would be earmarked for mental health purposes. The last page is a letter from the Assistant Secretary, presumably for Lands and Interior, to the Chairman of the Senate Committee, James Murray, where the administration, the Eisenhower administration, is making the point that the House version, which was amended by the House committee to provide for earmarking of funds derived from the land grants to the sole purpose of the hospitalization and care of mentally ill, we are inclined to believe that it would be wiser not to restrict them in this manner. Judge Green mentions this same letter in her recent court opinion. To me, one of the more troublesome aspects of this argument over the years has been the assumption by some that there is some peculiar basis in this land grant that would allow a dedicated use of general fund money. I think when one reads the act, especially if one reads the committee reports, which are admittedly easier, it is simply not found. There was no intention on the part of the Congress to restrict this then territory and this state to exclusively use the proceeds for mental health purposes.
Yeah, before I ask if there are any questions, a reminder, our meeting tomorrow morning will start at 9, not at 8:30. So 9 o'clock in the morning, not at 8:30. Any questions to Mr. Hogan at this time? We thank you very much. Mr. Gottstein.
Welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Madam Co-Chair. I technically represent are the people that are traditionally considered part of the mental health program. So it doesn't include the chronic alcoholics or the developmentally disabled, although as a class representative, basically everyone's in the same boat in terms of this litigation. David Walker, lead counsel, is unavoidably in Seattle today, and that's why I came down to address the committee. I thank you for letting me speak. He wrote a letter, which was hand-delivered to all of you this morning. In the letter, he talks about the status of settlement negotiations, and I just learned when you did that the administration is declaring an impasse. So the last I heard, we were still negotiating. But frankly, it's not too surprising the way things have been going. I would just like to read into the record one paragraph of Mr. Walker's letter, which is the last paragraph on the first page. The administration's proposal presented in work draft for CS House Bill 201 is not a settlement. It purports to buy out the trust by funding the mental health program. It unfairly characterizes the beneficiaries and is, in fact, unacceptable to all the parties who represent beneficiaries. It is unrealistic to think that the measure would be accepted by the plaintiffs or approved by the court. I don't think we need to go into the last sentence. You haven't seen me much down here this year about House Bill 201 or the companion Senate bill, and David Walker hasn't been here a lot every once in a while. And the reason for that is we're either going to have a settlement or we're going to litigate, and this bill before you represents litigation. We don't think it's fair From our perspective, the state has fiddled with the numbers to say that it's a full reconstitution. Our view is the proposal is about half of the original value of the trust, and more importantly, the basic approach in the bill is to completely eliminate the trust over time, and you have to work through the provisions of it, but it's really nothing more than an attempt to do, by different words, what the Supreme Court ruled illegal in 1985 regarding the 1978 legislation. So from my perspective, if the legislature passes this bill, it won't do anything more than demonstrate more than it has been already that the state is not a very good trustee. So I'm not going to be down here trying to get you not to pass it because it really doesn't matter to me. I would like to make one comment. The Attorney General mentioned that the court said that the Mental Health Enabling Act did not guarantee any particular level of funding. And we have agreed with that. In 1991, we agreed to legislation, to a proposed settlement, that would have reconstituted the trust with the original, with the value of the original lands, and whatever those lands earned would go first to the mental health program. We were working in good faith on that, and we got 98% of the way in through the court through tremendous opposition, some by factions of the beneficiary group that weren't prepared to settle unless there was a guaranteed income stream. That was not Mr. Walker's and my approach. There was tremendous opposition from the environmental community and other parties interested in, quote, the public lands. And I might say as an aside that, in my view, that opposition is quite misplaced because the 1991 legislation, Chapter 66, protects about 250,000 acres of land that was put into state parks and other legislative designations. For example, most of the Chilkat Bald Eagle Preserve is mental health trust lands. It was selected for timber, and under trust law, it has to be managed to produce as much income as possible. The settlement which the state decided not to pursue earlier this year, the Chapter 66 one, preserved those. Now, they can talk all they want about the set-off, the $1.3 billion, and certainly we can argue and probably will over what the exact set-off amount might be allowed, would be allowed, even if it should be allowed. But the other side of it is the Supreme Court said that only applied to lands that were, quote, sold. Well, the state still owns that land. Now, this, you know, is that sold? Well, we'll find out. There are a lot of other categories. In footnote 4 of that opinion, the Supreme Court said it wasn't deciding what sold meant, and it wasn't deciding who were what's called bona fide purchasers. And that's a concept that if a trustee conveys land in breach of trust, the only people that get to keep that land are people who have paid value for that land and had no notice of the breach of trust. And notice doesn't mean that they had to actually know. It just means that they had to have some reason to know, such as documents recorded in the recorder's office or legislation. And the various attempts at settlement have been basically to avoid those arguments and come to a fair settlement. This doesn't do that. It's interesting that about 9 months or so ago, after all this land work that we've been doing for the last 3 years, we indicated willingness to trade out the what we call the private third-party purchasers, those individuals who have entered into land sale contracts with the state and who are tied up into this lawsuit. And what we proposed is a straight value-for-value exchange for those lands. The administration has not been very interested in pursuing that, and I think that it might be time for this body to consider whether or not it wants to try and at least get those people out of the litigation, because as the Attorney General indicated, this proposed legislation won't do that. Uh, I would like to make one request, which is at various hearings I've heard the Attorney General say that he was providing information to the committee that we haven't gotten. I would like copies of that, if possible, Mr. Chairman. He indicated that he was ceding the record to use against us in court, and so I'd like to know at least what those materials are.
Carol, whatever we have in our packet, you supply to Mr. Gottstein.
I was a little taken aback by the presentation. I thought, as I indicated, so I'm perhaps not as prepared as I would otherwise be. But those are pretty much my comments. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to respond.
I guess I just have one, and the commissioner asked it twice for us to ask you, so I'll ask you, I guess. It's something about what specifically is required on the plaintiffs to settle the case.
We have, Mr. Walker and I have concurred in Mr. Volan's approach. We communicated that with him on Friday. I think the commissioner is a little bit behind in terms of where we were last Friday. The administration's proposal to us was a one-time cash payment of $122 million, and the response was from Mr. Volan was to make that $200 million to include the land that the state talked to us about, which, by the way, is a fairly divergent from the list that you were prepared or were provided. Some additional lands that we could talk about that there's no reason why they shouldn't go into the trust. The endowment concept. And the general fund participation. And I think that those two elements are worth discussing a little bit. We believe that the compensation package is somewhere around 65% of a full reconstitution of the trust. And that if we are to accept such a small amount of the original trust, that there needs to be something else to make it up, and that is this endowment concept. The idea is that the assets would be conveyed to the trust authority, and then the trust authority would manage them appropriately under trust principles and then spend the money. The reason for the general fund participation, and there's clearly extreme difficulties in enforcing any of that kind of a commitment, even if it was put into the law, even if it was in a court decree. But the basic problem is, let's say that the legislature would normally spend, as it does now in our view, $85 million on the mental health program in any given year, and the trust authority had $20 million a year for that year available to spend, that if the legislature just appropriated $65 million or $55 million for the mental health program, that the trust fund would be meaningless. And so the general fund component of that is just an attempt to prevent that supplanting type of activity. Again, it's somewhat problematical in terms of enforcement, but it was viewed by us as key to accepting less than what would be obtained in litigation. I guess the only thing I can mention at this point is that Mr. Walker and myself had agreed to a settlement 3 years ago that didn't have that in there, that just provided for the trust to have what money the land earned, and then have that go through the proper trust processes. And that is what the administration changed course over when the former Attorney General left, and now we're going to be back in litigation. If I could just say one more thing, and that is, that Judge Green's decision in December, I said I think that that we were 98% of the way there. The only thing that she found wrong with the settlement was that the state and we could back out of it, even after final approval, because of two provisions that the state insisted on getting wrong in the 1991 legislation, and those were that they didn't provide the legislature with the hypothecated lands list, and they wouldn't put in the 3804 and 05 exemption under the exchange provisions, and the last-minute demand of the state that if the court didn't release these private third-party purchasers, it wouldn't sign the settlement agreement. So those, if those things were resolved, the court clearly indicated that it would approve the settlement, or at least grant preliminary approval of the settlement. The amendments that the administration under the former Attorney General proposed last spring fixed those two problems. And so if they had passed last spring, the court's decision in December would have been different. The third thing, which is the immediate release of the private third-party purchasers, as I mentioned before, is something that we have been prepared to do for some time in kind of a mini Chapter 66 exchange. And the only reason why that I can see why the administration doesn't, well, there are two reasons. Why the administration doesn't want to do that is, one, it's got other people, other interests that it wants to satisfy. And the other is that clearly those are the lands that are most likely to be subject to the set-off. In other words, those are the lands that kind of sound like they're sold, and the state is saying, well, we don't really have to exchange those because we can say that we owe the money, but gee whiz, we've already spent it. So you don't get any land and you don't get any money. And that approach, ladies and gentlemen, is only going to be achieved through litigation because we are not going to give that up.
Okay, a couple of questions, Representative Martin and Navar.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gostein, I've been around listening to this thing on and off, but I haven't always been in Finance Committee, and even legislators sometimes get frustrated at what can we do to appease all the different groups. And I'm at a point now where, you know, it doesn't matter what happens, let's give our best two offers, your offer and the state's offer, to the judge and let them decide. Is there any value in that? You said you liked last year's bill, and I very much sold off on last year's bill with former A.G. Cole. Is that the one you were talking about?
Yes. Settlement?
And that one was pretty much to your liking?
Yes, it was.
The judge declared part of it to be unacceptable there.
There are other plaintiff groups that it was unacceptable to.
Are we at a point now it doesn't seem to matter what legislators do? It's just that the two parties go before a judge and say, this is our best offer. Are we into a binding arbitration situation?
Well, I think that it's the way things are currently set up, it looks like that. The only thing I would say is that I think it would be possible to authorize an exchange to take the private third-party purchasers out of the litigation, the people that purchased land. But that would take separate, you know, separate piece of legislation to do that.
Okay, Representative Navar.
Mr. Scott, in your calculation of basically that this offer, I think you said that this offer is about 65% of what you think the value of the trust is. Is that?
I'm not sure exactly what this offer, the one that they gave to us on Friday, with our response to it, was about 65%. This is substantially less. I would say it's more in the 50 to 55% range.
And in making that calculation, do you count as an offset the amount that the state has spent over the years on mental health trust programs?
No.
Thank you.
Representative Rusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gostein, in listening to this here over the years, there's one thing that I will never do, and that I will never vote for general fund monies to be used without oversight by the legislative body, because I want to know what programs are going to be used under the general funds, and I want to make darn sure that there's not empire building being done at the expense of the clients or the people that are supposed to get these services. So I just want you to understand, from my point of view, I will never give over legislative oversight over general fund money or whatever that's worth.
Yes, and our proposal does not propose that the legislature do that.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Gostein. At this time, I'm going to move out to the teleconference network briefly. Mr. Jesse, I have you signed up here. Did you want to testify now, or?
Well, at your convenience, I thought it might make more sense for you.
I thought we would probably swing through here, and we're going to have to do it quickly. One person at each of the sites, and then we'd come back here. Could we move to Ketchikan, please, and Mr. Robert Gore?
last surviving member of the original Pioneer Falls Advisory Board, appointed by Governor Hickel during his first term. I've been reappointed by every governor since. And my interest really in seeing this mental health and stress problem brought to a conclusion is that we in the Pioneer Home provide care for and house many of the legal beneficiaries to the trust funds. We have, we're the only care facility in the state that will accept people with Alzheimer's and other related mental disabilities without them having some underlying physical or mental or physical illness that brings them under the auspices of Medicare and into the other private nursing homes in Alaska. As it is, we have more or less reconstituted our homes to a position where we are providing care for the beneficiaries of the Trust Act, and gentlemen, it's the most expensive level of care that we provide, and it's our hope that eventually money from the trust fund proceeds can be directed to Pioneer Homes to take some of the burden off the general fund for the operation of our facilities. As it is, we have a difficulty persuading the legislature and the administration now of our need for operating costs, and being the only ones who will take somebody who meets other qualifications, who has mental difficulty from Alzheimer's to serious senility or alcoholism. We really look to you for your assistance in providing a quick and a reasonable settlement to the problems that are holding up the acceptance of the proposal for settlement. And speaking for myself, and I'm sure some of the other members of the board, we ask for your consideration in bringing this to the quickest conclusion as you can, so that we may continue the work that we want to do. We consider the Pioneer Homes as homes for the living and not warehouses for the dying. But in order to keep them that way, we have to provide the physical and occupational therapy, other treatments that are expensive to keep these people more in their own environment and stable mental condition. And we do need to apply and receive proceeds from the funds in order to do that. And this is speaking from 25 years experience on the board, and we do have serious problems. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Gordon. And as we move on, could we keep our testimony directed towards House Bill 201, please, and not the general concept of mental health needs? Could we move to Mr. Paul Baer, please, in Anchorage?
I'm with the municipality of Anchorage, and Mayor Payne is very supportive of trying to have this bill passed because of the importance of the mental health litigation to the entire state. And with that in mind, the city met with Ron Swanson from the Department of Natural Resources, and I think Anchorage is in a unique position because its total entitlement was 45,000 acres of land, and of the 45,000 acres, it only received 27,000 acres in the original allotment of total land given to the state. Despite this fact, Mayor Fink has been willing to offer several parcels of property that are available, or in Anchorage, that are available, contingent, of course, upon the assembly approval. And these parcels are, some of them are quite valuable. There's three lots on L Street that are right in the downtown area. There's the approximately 59 acres over by activities there that they would, and some of them are leased, at least at low amounts of money, but there are also some vacant properties there that are, could be used for, in the mission statement of the mental health. Would like to offer those 59 acres. In addition, there was another 120-acre parcel out by Golden View Drive, and that's some original mental health land. And in the mid-1980s, I doubt it's valued this high now, but was valued at about $3.6 million.
Okay, Paul, could we speak towards the bill, please? We know that Anchorage also got a cash offset.
Partial cash offset, I believe. And so we're, you know, we're in support of this measure and would like to see it come about because some of the activities of the Anchorage and throughout the state are being held. Mr. Meehan is also here to testify.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. At this time, we move to Matt Sue, and we have Paul Huppert. Paul, can you hear us?
Yeah, can you hear me, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, we can, real well.
Pardon?
Yes.
Okay. I would like to urge the settlement of the mental health trust plan because of the agriculture look at this thing. I'm a director of Alaska Farming and Stockbrokers as well as my own interest. I have Mr. Harvey Boscombe sitting here, and he has got a very definite interest because at that point McKenzie Road, he's got a place that he's met all the development requirements, and the future looks very dim if you don't get that thing settled. We've got a lot of parcels out there that there are people on them, and they need to get it settled to be able to let those people know that they're going to get a deed to it. We also have a lot of inquiries on those parcels that have been settled in the state. And ever since this mental health issue has come up, we have had nothing. It's totally blocked, this type of development. And I'm involved in agriculture. And I'll tell you what, we in this valley need some support to get some more development going, or it is, we're definitely going to have a common impact for dying out. I think that we have a commitment toward those people. The thing that we can do to urge this thing to be settled, the assurance behind it. Thank you, Ron.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Huppert. At this time, let's move to Fairbanks and take Mr. Ladd McBride. Thank you, Mr. McBride. This time we'll move back to Juneau here before we go around the teleconference again and take Mr. Jeff Jesse.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Jesse. I'm the senior attorney with Advocacy Services of Alaska, and I represent four named beneficiaries of the trust and the group commonly referred to as the developmentally disabled. I think that what we're all hearing and what we all want to do is accomplish a settlement. That's been the goal for a long time, and we've had several tries at it. But I've listened to the administration now several times on this bill, and it reminds me of a clinical I did with representing juveniles as a public defender. And they used to come in and tell me these incredible stories about what happened and what they're going to do and how things happen. And what I used to do with them is say, well, look, let's do this. You be the judge. I'll tell you the story you told me, and you see what it sounds like to you. So let me go at this a couple of ways and see if this makes sense. One of the things that the administration is saying is, well, this is a reconstitution that meets the Weiss decision, and so it's going to fly by the court. Now, I understand they gave you the Weiss decision. I encourage you to read it again. The Weiss decision said, give back the original land, not substitute land, but the original land that you can still give back to the trust. This does that to some degree, but the court also said the only land you don't have to give back is land that was sold. Now, what the state's sort of trying to say is that, well, we're going to tell the court that we think just giving land to the municipalities is sold. We're going to tell the court that saying something is a park or a refuge is sold. And because we're going to tell the court that, they're going to believe that it's sold, and we're going to get this $1.3 billion offset. Well, I don't think it's going to happen that way. I don't think that the court, if you read that decision, means that sold is whatever the state comes in now and says, in our mind, this land was sold. One other way to look at whether this is going to fly by the court is to go back and remember what the legislature tried to do in 1990 with Chapter 210. What the legislature did was pass a bill that said, okay, we're going to compensate the trust. And we're going to compensate the trust with money. We're going to take 6% of the unrestricted general fund revenue of the state in perpetuity, billions of dollars, and pay for this land. And they took that to the court, and the court went, that is not a settlement. That is a unilateral attempt to resolve this case, and we will either follow the Weiss decision or there will be a bilateral settlement. Now, what's following the Weiss decision? I think what the Weiss court had in mind, but you read it for yourself, is you go through each category of land and argue over was it sold or not sold. If it was not sold, then it comes back to the trust. If it was sold, yes, I understand that then there is the issue of the offset. We have worked very hard to try to get a settlement with the administration. The administration, I think, has tried very hard to work with us. We, I think, have been making some progress. But I want to tell you a couple of things that's happened that has made it very difficult to sort of get a handle on how to bring you a resolution in a timely manner. For example, it was only a week and a half ago that the state added another 200,000 acres of mineralized land onto the table. They asked us to look at this because they thought it was worth $400 million. Well, of course, we said, would you show us the maps and would you show us the information that led you to believe it was worth that much money? Well, they didn't have the maps. And it's taken us many days since then to get the information we need to evaluate that. It was only last Thursday that the administration came to us and indicated that there were portions of trust fund concept that they didn't feel they could agree to. It was also last Thursday that the administration came and put on the table substantially less money than you see in this proposal. In fact, I'm rather confused because as of last week, the numbers of acres and the amount of money that the state has been talking about is substantially less than this. So it, again, is somewhat hard to get a handle on a moving target. Now, what we've done is Philip Boland, the other plaintiff's attorney, right as we speak, is in Anchorage talking to Julian Mason, the person who's heading up the state's negotiating team, and we are not throwing in the towel. We continue to believe that we can reach a reasonable resolution. Now, what are some of these other things that we're asking for besides compensation for the property that made up the trust? One of the things you need to really be clear about is we believe this was a real trust. We don't believe that this was just a smoke and mirrors game that the federal government played on Alaska. We've heard testimony today about this earmarking. Well, it wasn't a dedicated trust because Congress specifically didn't earmark this money for mental health services. Well, I hope you read those couple of pages pretty carefully because the reason there was the escape clause put in the Enabling Act wasn't because Congress didn't intend to restrict the state on how they spent the money. It was because they were afraid that we would hit oil and there would be so much money in the trust that it would be unreasonable to have that go only for mental health services. It wasn't because they wanted the state to be able to take whatever income the trust generated and do whatever they wanted to with it.
Is that part of the record?
It certainly is. In fact, it's in the materials that you received today. One of the concerns was, well, gee, what if they hit oil? They might have more money than the whole state of Alaska. if they happened to hit the oil. Well, I wish we did too, but we didn't. Let me give you an idea of what this trust would generate at the amounts of money and land that we're talking about now. The $225 million, if you put that into a bank account and assumed an 8% return with 4% inflation proofing, that corpus would only generate about $8 million a year. The land right now, if we got back the current coal leases, generates maybe $2 or $3 million. We're talking about a trust income here of under $15 million. Now, hopefully, the land will produce a little bit more money over time. But obviously, unless we hit oil, we're not talking about huge quantities of money. Well, why have we asked for this trust fund so that, like the Alaska Housing Authority and like the Industrial Development Authority, the trust authority could disperse those funds directly to the program? Well, the reason is we're not going to have very much money. And we want to make sure that the money can be spent to benefit the beneficiaries. Now, why are we getting into the general fund business? I mean, after all, that's the purview of the legislature. Well, that's exactly as Mr. Gottstein has explained. The concern is that if all that happens with the trust money is the state takes the trust money, supplants some general fund money with it, and goes on about its business, well, we haven't gotten any tangible benefit for any beneficiaries out of a settlement, if it can work like that. And if you listen very carefully to the commissioner, who I have tremendous respect for, and it has grown considerably as we've talked about things, even he says that under this bill, the $225 million payments go into the account and then come right back out to pay for services. Well, it doesn't matter if it's $225 million, $500 million, or $5 billion. If the money goes in and comes right back out, it isn't preserved as a trust corpus to generate money into the future, we have nothing. So these are not things that we're insisting on because we're unreasonable folks and we're trying to somehow get into your business. What we're trying to end up with is a real trust at the end of the rainbow here. And again, if you're looking at a total income of less than $15 million, we are not going to be major players in the mental health world, but we have been willing to work with the administration, trying to make their approach work even at the dollars that we're looking at for income, because if we can get a true trust and help even one beneficiary, it's worth settling this case. However, I have to tell you that as I understand this bill, it will not operate as a true trust. It will not help any beneficiaries. It will not resolve this litigation, in my opinion. Now, I can't tell you, I know for sure that the court is going to reject this as an approach. But you be the judge. To a large extent, the state's relying on convincing the courts that it's okay to pay for this land with money that you've already spent. Now, given that the courts were not very receptive to the state trying to pay for the trust with billions of dollars in future income, do you think it's going to work? Now, where do we go from here? Well, I'm not throwing in the towel. Phillip's up in Fairbanks trying to negotiate with Julian Mason. We're going to go and do the best job that we can with the time that we have, understanding that we cannot bring this to you at the 11th hour again, to do a deal that we think is a reasonable, fiscally responsible approach to this settlement. We understand we're going to have to make some compromises on the money, from what our proposal was, and we're prepared to do that. We understand there are some other areas of this bill or our proposal that we'll have to give some ground on. We're prepared to do some of those things as well, provided that it meets the overall goals. Now, what should we do if we don't get a settlement? Certainly right now we don't have one to present to you. Well, you can pass this bill, even though I don't think it's going to do you any good. In fact, I think it stands a good chance of delaying and extending litigation, because rather than going through which lands go back to the trust right now, we'll be litigating over whether this is a valid unilateral settlement of the case. And after we spend a couple of years doing that, then we'll get around to litigating what land goes back into the trust. So you could certainly pass this bill, although in my opinion, it probably makes things worse and more confused, not better. Or, my suggestion is that you start considering as a fallback trying to come up with a bill and there are a couple of models already, one in the House, one in the Senate, that I think could be modified to at least do something for some of the most negatively impacted folks involved in this case. And those are these third-party purchasers, the so-called moms and pops, that I get calls from regularly because their lives are destroyed by this case. You know, you get calls from them in a motel room with their animals and their family because their house won't close because it's got this problem with it. I think we could work out right now, this session, an exchange of lands for those lands and free those hostages permanently now, regardless of what we do to resolve the rest of this case later. In my view, that's a much more tangible thing to go back to the people of the state with, that at least we've picked off a piece of this problem, than to go back and say, well, we've got another settlement, all right, which is what this bill purports to be, or a resolution, if you will, since it's clearly not a settlement. Well, we've got another bill that resolves this case when all of you know that at a minimum, it brings more litigation, not a quick resolution of the case. So again, my suggestion is we're going to work our tail off with the time we have, Mr. Chairman. As you know, I'm committed to trying to work something out here. We're going to come to you with something absolutely as fast as we can. If we don't make it, my suggestion is you look at trying to get some tangible relief for the people out there that we can get some relief to. Thank you very much.
I just have two kind of brief questions, and then Representative Martin and Navarre. I guess it has to be, because I do see some settlement sentiment in the legislature right now to say, let's just go back to the 1 million acres and say, mental health, here's your 1 million acres back. And I guess my two questions in doing that, number one, would the third parties be any worse off than they are now? They would have to negotiate, of course, through the mental health folks. And would mental health be any better off? Because as you said, what monies could you be generating in order to meet the services you need?
I don't think many of those people would be better off. Certainly, if we don't do something for the third-party purchasers now, they'll be dragged through a bunch of litigation.
If they were placed back under the mental health, in other words, we just take the 1 million acres as it originally was and said, here, you have it. And I think there's a sufficient number of votes in the legislature to do that now. I mean, how are things worse off then than they are now?
Well, you can't really give it all to us. That's kind of your problem, because the munis are holding on to a bunch of it. These third parties have a bunch of it. Now, certainly you can undo the legislative designations and convey that back to the trust. And, you know, what you still have, you can change its status and send back. But certainly the third parties... and the munis, you can't give that land back to us anymore because you don't have it anymore. That's what created the problem. So if we litigated the case and those folks lost their claim, the munis are particularly vulnerable, then they're going to have to give that land back to the trust. They won't have it at all. And then, you know, you'll have to deal with them.
Right, but is that any worse off than we've been trying
well,
to deal
Well, I understand
off?
That. And as far as, are we going to be better off if you give us the land? I'll tell you why I'm fearful that we wouldn't be. Is because there is still a real reluctance on the part of some people with the state, and I think some people in this legislature, to say that this is really a trust. They want to try to say that because it wasn't exclusive, although I've explained to you why it wasn't made exclusive, it was in case there was this huge bonanza, not because they didn't want it treated as a trust, we'd still be in arguing over whether the land was being managed properly and whether the legislature was properly dealing with the money. You know, one of the things that I find interesting about having DNR manage the lands, I'll tell you why that's hard for us. We had a meeting 2 weeks ago, and the